on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. Hello to you, the listener. I'm Gail Seiler, your host for today. Thanks for tuning in. It's still kind of like the new year, so I'm wondering if some of you maybe had as one of your New Year's resolutions to support KHOI. So here's a reminder to do that. You can make the donation or become a member of KHOI right now. Basic membership is $55, but you can donate any amount. The easiest way to do it is to go to the website, khoifm.org, and click the donate button on the left-hand side. It's quick and secure, and then you can cross it off your New Year's resolution to-do list. And you can rest easy knowing that KHOI will continue to be there for you whenever you want to listen. It's the weekend, almost, so I'm sure you're wondering what the weather will be. And it looks like it will be kind of wintry with maybe a little snow. Today will be mostly cloudy with a high near 36. Tonight we will have some snow, it looks like, mainly after midnight. The low will be around 26, and we may have about an inch of snow. Tomorrow, on Saturday, a little more snow is likely, mainly before noon. We may get another inch, but reports vary. Then Sunday will be partly sunny with a high near 33, and that will take you through the weekend. So it doesn't sound like there's enough snow for cross-country skiing, which is what I'm waiting for, but at least it's a little bit. Later in the show, we'll be speaking with Erica Johnson from the American Friends Service Committee about immigration. And Mary Rankin will be here, and she's bringing with her several guests to talk about different unique community engagement opportunities related to sustainability. But first, we've got Dennis Hart with the news roundup.
Gail, as always, it's good to be with you and with our listeners on this Friday. The weekend's just ahead, of course, but before we get there, let's take a look at what made news in the pages of the Ames Tribune this past week. And what made news last Saturday was a bank robbery that took place in Ames last Friday afternoon. Police said a man went into the U.S. Bank on Lincoln Way in Campustown and displayed a handgun. He demanded money from an employee and left with an undisclosed amount of cash. No one was injured. The man was wearing black glasses and a dark coat and had a black scarf covering his face. Last Saturday's Trib also reported that the Ames Police Department had appointed a new community outreach officer. He is Kirk Kruger, who has worked as a police patrol officer in Ames for the past 8 years. Part of his new job will be to inform the community with social media and online videos and continue to grow the lines of communication between the public and the PD. He replaces Eric Snyder, who's been the community outreach officer for the past few years and who will now serve as a patrol officer for the department. Also last Saturday, the Trib had word that the United Way of Story County has a community impact grant opportunity for agencies to apply for in the coming weeks. The purpose of the grant is to help support projects that are focused on human services in the areas of health, education, and financial stability. Grant amounts will start at $7,500. Saturday's Trib also reported that a donation program is underway for the Story City Antique Carousel. The nonprofit group that runs the carousel is signing up sponsors for park benches and picnic tables to install at the carousel. There's also a chance to sponsor a brick. The carousel turns 105 years old this year, and it's operated mostly by volunteers. About 15,000 people ride the carousel each year. And one more note from Saturday's paper, word that the owner of the Mucky Duck Pub had opened a new shop, this one on Main Street in Ames. It's called British and American Foods and Gifts at 328 Main. Owner Marcus Johnson said the shop has only been open a few weeks, so there's still some work he wants to put into it in the coming months. Sunday's Tribune reported that Massachusetts Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren stopped in Ames last Saturday during her weekend visit to Iowa. That visit came just days after Warren formed a presidential exploratory committee. One of her stops was, yes, here in Ames, where she attended a private party for members of Story County Democrats at the home of Ames City Councilwoman Amber Corrieri. The news media were not notified of the event. Corrieri said the event was for a limited number of local Democrats. Also last Sunday, the Trib reported that after more than 27 years in law enforcement, Story County Sheriff's Captain Barry Thomas has announced his retirement. Thomas began his career at the Sheriff's Office as a sworn jail deputy. Since then, he's worked his way through the department and has served as a patrol deputy, a sergeant in the Field Services Division, and as chief deputy. He's working on getting a Ph.D. from Iowa State University and wants to continue educating others about law enforcement. He told the Trib, in his words, "I can't tell you how thankful I am to have worked in Story County. Sunday's trip also had word that Story County's floodplain map is getting a comprehensive upgrade. The new map will highlight the chances that flooding will appear at 100-year and 200-year levels and include buildings throughout the county that are in high-risk flood zones. Story County residents are invited to see the overhauled map next week on Wednesday, January 16th at 5:30 p.m. at the Ames Water Plant's main conference room. Sunday's paper also reported that Boone is going through a series of changes as businesses grow into new locations. The former Redeker's building on the south end of Story Street has been in the process of transforming into a strip mall for the past few months. Among the new tenants there, Dollar Tree, U.S. Cellular, and Goodwill. A short distance away, Verizon Wireless is opening a new office, and nearby, several other businesses have opened or are in the process of opening. And one more note from Sunday's Tribune, a story you might possibly have already heard about. It's about the basketball game Iowa State University's men's team played last Saturday against Kansas at Hilton Coliseum. Iowa State won 77-60. And there was another sports story of note last Sunday as well, this one involving Iowa State's women's basketball team, which went on the road to play Kansas in Lawrence and won that game 82-73. The Trib is not published on Mondays. Tuesday's paper reported that the Central Iowa law enforcement community was mourning the death of Iowa State University police officer Scott Lindley, who died January 2nd at a Des Moines hospital. The 25-year-old Lindley lived in Ankeny and was a patrol officer with the ISU Police Department. Police Chief Michael Newton would not discuss details of Lindley's unexpected death, but said he was passionate about law enforcement and public service. He graduated from Iowa State and was sworn in as a campus police officer in December 2017. Tuesday's paper also had word that Ames Middle School principal Dan Fox had resigned and that the school board had approved the appointment of Jonas Michael as the new principal. All this coming weeks after district officials sent an email to middle school parents that a temporary change had been made in school leadership. That email said that Ames High Principal Spence Evans would oversee both the high school and the middle school on an interim basis. District officials said there was no threat or incident that prompted the change, that no criminal activity occurred, and that police were not involved. The district said the changes were needed to improve the culture at the middle school and that there had been parental frustrations with some student behavior, including bullying. The new principal, Jonas Michael, worked for the district in a variety of roles before leaving 2 years ago to work in Maryland. There was more in Tuesday's paper, including a report about a recent name change of Iowa State University's Margaret Sloss Center for Women to the Margaret Sloss Center for Women and Gender Equity. The change was effective Monday, and it aligns with national trends of colleges and universities to provide inclusive representation for its students, regardless of gender. Also Tuesday, the Trib reported that the three Ames Racket and Fitness Centers are bustling with activities these days as members try to keep New Year's fitness resolutions. And one more note from Tuesday's paper, word that Iowa State University's star football running back and wide receiver both declared for the NFL draft on Monday. That means that David Montgomery and Hakeem Butler are foregoing their final seasons of college football eligibility. Running back Montgomery rushed for 1,216 yards and 13 touchdowns this past season. Wide receiver Butler caught 60 passes for 1,318 yards and 9 touchdowns. Wednesday's paper reported that trial in a lawsuit challenging the construction of the Dakota Access Pipeline and outlining alleged damage to property caused by the pipeline's construction got underway with jury selection in Boone County on Tuesday. The lawsuit was filed by Judith Ann Lamb, who owns property in Boone County where the pipeline was buried. Construction of the pipeline generated protests from activists across Iowa. It spans more than 1,100 miles from North Dakota to southern Illinois and crosses through 18 Iowa counties, including Boone and Story counties. Wednesday's Trib also reported on actions taken during Tuesday's Ames City Council meeting. The council proclaimed the week of January 6th National Slavery and Human Trafficking Awareness Week. It also passed an ordinance that would remove multifamily residential properties from the list of property types that require individual metering and adopted an ordinance establishing parking regulations on Suncrest Drive from Red Fox Road to Cedar Lane. Also Wednesday, the Trib had word that the Story County Board of Supervisors had scheduled a meeting for Tuesday, January 22nd, to talk about the Master Matrix. That's the system the county uses to evaluate proposed livestock confinements as it decides whether to recommend approval of any such plans to the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The meeting will take place about a month after the supervisors voted 2-1 to recommend approval of a plan to build 3 hog confinements north of Nevada. Another note from Wednesday's paper, a story about the search for a new president of the Iowa State University Research Park. Former President Steve Carter retired at the end of last year after 18 years at the helm. A search committee was set up, and it's found a search company that will help find the candidates that best fill the need. And one more note from Wednesday's paper, this one on the sports pages. Just days after Iowa State University's men's basketball team had its big victory over Kansas at Hilton Coliseum, the Cyclones went on the road to Texas to play Baylor. And Iowa State lost to Baylor 73-70. Thursday's Trib, yesterday's, reported on fundraising efforts for the proposed Healthy Life Center in Ames. Fundraisers plan to hold a public meeting on January 31st to update their effort to raise $18 million as part of the planned $49 million project. If that $18 million goal is reached, the City of Ames, Heartland Senior Services, Mary Greeley Medical Center, and Story County then would decide whether to contribute to the project. The final step would be a bond referendum that could be put forward to Ames voters later this year. So far, fundraisers say it's been a challenge raising the $18 million they seek. Also yesterday, the Trib reported that Story County Emergency Management is conducting a survey of businesses to see what their emergency plans look like. The survey was prompted by last summer's tornadoes and flash floods that struck central Iowa. So far, more than five dozen businesses have responded. Thursday's Trib also reported that the Iowa Court of Appeals has rejected a woman's appeal who argued that an Ames police officer wrongly searched her purse when she was a passenger in a car. 37-year-old Michelle Swenson unsuccessfully argued that the officer did not have probable cause to search the car or her purse that was inside the vehicle. Methamphetamine was found inside her purse, and Swenson was tried, convicted, and sentenced to jail for drug possession. One more note from Thursday's Trib. The City of Ames Animal Control was seeking help to find the owner of a dog that bit a resident to confirm the animal's rabies vaccination information. The incident took place last Friday at North Dakota Avenue and Reliable Street. The dog was described as medium-sized, brown, and white. And that, Gale, is our summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. I think I'll take the next couple of days off, but I'll be right back here on Monday with a look at what's making news around the state. In the meantime, I hope you have an absolutely great weekend.
Immigration has been in the news a great deal lately, as we all know. So we invited someone to speak with us this morning who knows about what is going on with immigrants and immigration. We have with us Erica Johnson from the American Friends Service Committee, or AFSC, in Des Moines. Thanks for being here, Erica.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
We're going to start by asking you, who or what is American Friends Service Committee?
Yeah, thanks for asking. So AFSC, American Friends Service Committee, is a 101 now year old Quaker organization. We work around the world on what we like to call peace and justice issues. We've got offices in about 35 areas around the world, and each office is focused on different things. But in Iowa, our work focuses primarily on immigrant rights. And so we provide legal services to immigrants around the state of Iowa, and also work on systemic change through building leaders and engaging in advocacy and organizing.
And you coordinate your efforts with other branches, so to speak, in addition to working locally in Iowa.
Yeah, absolutely. And that sort of brings in why AFSC brings a unique perspective to what's going on the border right now, because we do have offices in Central America, where a lot of the refugees who are fleeing violence and poverty and persecution are arriving at the southern border. We've got offices in Mexico, where the large exodus of refugees has recently passed. And we've got offices at the border now who are witnessing the sort of de facto refugee camps and the persecution that those folks are facing right now. In addition to in the interior, like Iowa and Colorado, places where folks eventually end up when they go through the process of being detained and asking for asylum.
And there are other AFSC offices in the Midwest, a few others?
Yeah, we've got folks in offices down in St. Louis, up in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area, Ypsilanti in Michigan, Ohio, and Chicago.
And they work on similar but somewhat different issues in different locations.
Yep. Each office can kind of choose the work that we do based on the local context and the local needs. So we've got our partners up in Michigan work on criminal justice reform issues. And Ohio, they're working on immigrant rights, similar to what we are. Chicago is doing a lot of work on peace building broadly, including Israel-Palestine peace building efforts and racial justice and policing issues and similarly racial reconciliation, racial justice issues in the St. Paul and St. Louis offices too.
What is AFSC doing now around immigration, specifically in the context of the recent refugee influx to the border?
Well, like I said, because we have offices both sort of, well, all along where folks are being impacted, you know, starting from where people are starting out in their home countries in the Northern Triangle, Guatemala, El Salvador, that area, Honduras, also in Mexico, and then on the border, we really are uniquely positioned to hear the stories and see the reality of what's going on. And so recently, because of the stories and because of really understanding the need that people are seeing that forces them to leave their country and seek asylum in the U.S., we held a week of action together with national partners the week of starting December 10th, so a couple weeks ago now, to really on the border to really draw attention to sort of the call to stand in solidarity with families seeking asylum. And so that was all in part due to what, like I said, our offices saw in Central America, in Mexico, and then along the border. So what happened was that on the first day of that week of action on December 10th, a huge group of faith leaders, I can't remember the total number of faith leaders that participated in the action, but actually walked to the border, San Diego-Tijuana border, there on the beach and confronted Customs and Border Patrol agents as they tried to stand in solidarity with asylum seekers. And I think it was 32 individuals ended up getting arrested engaging in what ended up being sort of a civil disobedience. And one of our staff members actually held in detention for 24 hours. It's a really interesting video folks can see on our Facebook page of him getting arrested, sort of violently arrested. And then, like I said, later he was let out of detention without charges.
And there was part of that action that took place here in Iowa, I remember hearing.
Yeah, that's right. So there was 100 actions coordinated then around the country just in solidarity or echo events during that week of action. And here in Iowa, we had an event at the federal building, sort of a like rally slash meeting with members of Congress. So we had about 35 people who were gathered there out on the 7th floor of the federal building downtown Des Moines, who then met with staff from Senator Grassley and Senator Ernst's offices to let them know sort of the to try to cut through the chatter, the myths about what's going on the border, and let them know the reality of what's happening there, that our folks have seen, you know, firsthand. And we also projected an image on the side of the federal building, sort of to juxtapose the hypocrisy of the time of year, the season, the Christmas season at the time. The biblical line is, for I was a stranger and you welcomed me, but we changed it to say, for I was a stranger and you tear gassed me, and projected that image on the side of the federal building.
Since you do have people, as you said, working kind of all along the way throughout Central America and closer to the border, what would you say is the difference between the way the immigrants or the refugees are being portrayed versus what kind of on the ground you've learned?
Every day it seems like we hear, well, obviously news about what's going on at the border and trying to sift through the noise and kind of figure out exactly what is happening on the ground is difficult. But we, again, because we've got partners on the ground, we hear pretty regularly, and they're there, right? They're there to see. And staff from our office actually was there at the end of October trying to help people navigate the process of seeking asylum and kind of explaining the steps there and what to expect. And she was working on both sides of the border and really saw families, people, women and kids. She's got pictures that, again, if folks are interested, they can find on Facebook. Women and kids just sort of setting up camp on concrete outside these ports of entry, waiting to have their turn to talk to an immigration officer and explain why they have credible fear of returning to their home country and then be allowed to start the process of seeking asylum. And so, contrary to the sort of criminalization narrative where politicians like to talk about a crisis in terms that stoke fear of the other or of this idea to motivate people a lot of times to turn out for elections. That's what we've seen that type of criminalization narrative used for in the past. What we actually see is families who are fleeing from something or pulled to something, as the case may be, here in the interior, Iowa or Colorado, wherever the case may be.
So there's really, in some ways, been a change in terms of the preponderance of folks at the border are not coming for work at this time. They're coming more for safety and to seek asylum here.
I think it's probably all of the above, right? Mm-hmm. It's easy to kind of generalize always, and it sort of depends on who you're talking to, certainly. But mm-hmm. When my colleague Jody was talking to folks, that was, you know, what people were saying is that they had specific instances of threats of gang violence, or that their teenage son was being asked to join one of the gangs or pressured to join one of the gangs, and that was something that they didn't want for them, a life that they didn't want for them. There are certainly stories that we've also heard of people fleeing the striking poverty that's been caused by global climate change. So farmers in Guatemala who can't farm anymore because of the severe drought that's been going on for years and years and years. So all of these, mm-hmm. it's like anything else, right? It's complicated and it's nuanced and it depends on who you talk to. But certainly what we're seeing is the manifestation of all of these different global issues sort of intersecting and causing a really complicated crisis.
You hear a lot about drugs at the border. And yet I heard a statistic that most illegal drugs that coming into the country are coming in not across the border in random locations. They're coming in at official points of entry, and they're coming in vehicles, like concealed in trucks and things like that. So the idea that immigrants or folks seeking refugee status are bringing drugs with them is just kind of a fabrication.
I think that's another really good example of sort of the intersectionality of our of a lot of different issues. And so when we talk about the war on drugs and the failure of that whole process, procedure, or attempt to address the issue of drugs and the violence of drugs and the addiction of drugs, like this is just another, I think what's going on at the border is another sort of scapegoating of rather than addressing the real causes of the problem, we're addressing sort of those who don't really have anything to do with it, or are, you know, if they do, they're sort of low level. They're not necessarily those that are going to bring a solution to these larger problems that we're talking about.
Let's switch to Iowa a little bit, if we can. How are some of these issues playing out in Iowa, in the Des Moines area, and throughout the state?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked the question, because I think too often we see these news reports and they remain sort of in obscurity,
right, far away.
Or far away. Yeah. And the reality is that when folks are, when they ask for asylum at the border, eventually the practice has been to release them to family members or sponsors in the interior. And so what that looks like is that, and what we expect to continue is that folks will begin arriving in Iowa. They have already. We are working with several families who have recently arrived and need support in some cases. Not every case, but in some cases. And so folks arrive, and then they have to go to regular ICE check-ins. Occasionally, they have ankle monitors that they have to wear for at least a certain period of time while their asylum case moves forward. So and this sort of gets to the question of, like, the desperate need that we have for people to be involved here in Iowa. It's not enough to just read the stories or hear the news, the media talk about what's going on, this crisis, whether it's at the border or here in Iowa. Folks really need to get involved. And they can do that by contacting us, following us on Facebook. We'll put things, calls to action out often. One of those calls to action is accompaniment, going with people to their ICE check-ins. We've heard over the last 2 years an increase of people going to ICE check-ins, following the rules, the requirements that are set out for them to abide by the legal process of applying for asylum, for example. And they go to these ICE check-ins, and one of the family members, for example, is detained. And so we have a group of folks, allies in the community, who will go with families more to show them that there is a community of people who actually are welcoming them here in the state of Iowa and that want them here, and also to send a message to ICE that we expect people to come out of those check-ins and we expect them to be given the access to due process. So that's one of the ways that sort of we're seeing this manifest itself here in Iowa. And then also, just once folks arrive, they're functionally, as they try to work through the process of applying for asylum, access to legal counsel is so important. Folks are much more likely to be able to have positive outcomes on the process of asylum if they have legal help. And that's a resource that is hard to come by in Iowa, just because of that we don't have a whole lot of immigration attorneys, and those that we have, a lot of them are expensive. So folks have a lot of obstacles, a lot of barriers to overcome when they get here, and just having people aware that there are needs and involved in hearing the stories here in Iowa is sort of where we're at.
Is AFSC able to provide legal assistance?
We don't have an attorney on staff to take complicated cases, and asylum cases typically are very complicated and can take months, years. We do help with filing paperwork. Certainly our staff, Jody Mashick, is what's called a Department of Justice accredited representative. And we maintain a list of attorneys around the state that we can supply to allies or families in the community who are interested in trying to secure legal representation.
So once people come here, say from the border, what other kinds of resources or help might they need?
So functionally, folks, there's usually a time period where people can't work. They're not allowed to work. And so that means that they're reliant on the family that they're placed with, that they're living with, or sponsors that have agreed to sort of provide for them. And in some cases, if that doesn't work out, or if there's some snafu, as sometimes happens in life, right, then folks are completely reliant on the community to pay bills for shelter, for a place to live, for food, for transportation, all of that kind of stuff. Sort of it's very similar to what we see new refugees. Again, asylees and refugees, I won't go into the terminology.
I was wondering about that.
It's
probably too technical.
But refugees, basically the short version is refugees are given their status outside of the country. And then once they arrive, they already have, a status. So they can work, they can do things. Whereas asylees apply for that status while they're here in the country. And so they have, by definition, sort of entered without documentation and then asked for to begin the process. And so as they go through the process, like I said, they're not necessarily available able to qualify for services or work. Mm-hmm. So that means that they're sort of in this limbo stage where in some cases they need a lot of support. Not in every case, like I said, but in some cases.
At the border, once people get there, how do they get from there to Iowa? Do they have to have an initial sponsor here and then they come on a bus, or how does that work?
Well, it's all pretty confusing now, but it has been the case. That's mm-hmm. how it has worked, is that people are released to a sponsor or a family member in the interior. And then, you know, travel is arranged via plane, via bus, via however folks go about it. But what we're hearing now is that the previous processes have been really confused and sometimes it seems intentionally clogged by ICE releasing a bunch of people from detention, just like, around the holidays especially, this was a big problem, just dropping hundreds of people off at the Greyhound bus station and saying, here you go. It's interesting because when I've been at the federal building doing these accompaniments that I mentioned earlier, often we'll see other people walking around with these telltale big manila folders that have all of their paperwork that they were given at the border. And usually these manila folders have on one side like a piece of white paper with printed words on it. Please help me. I don't speak English. And then sort of written in or printed where they're supposed to go. And whenever we see those, that's an indication that this person has recently been released from the border and that they are probably seeking asylum and could use some help.
You're right that living here in Ames, we really, even just, 45 minutes from Des Moines, we have no idea that that is happening and that people are undergoing that just, a short distance away. Say more about what people can do, people here in Ames or in our listening area.
Yeah, I think getting signed up for the emails that we send is probably helpful. We send monthly emails, at least monthly emails, to kind of talk about what's been going on in terms of activities and sort of the hot topics. And then we lay out sort of the regular or upcoming events. We have both regular events, monthly events down in most of them are in Des Moines, but not necessarily specifically. And then, of course, following us on Facebook to get the latest news. We repost, I think just today, this morning, I posted something from our colleagues down in San Diego, a really interesting photo shoot of what was going on yesterday while President Trump was at the border. The Customs and Border Patrol was conducting sort of, I can't remember how they termed them, exercises of some sort to like combat readiness is what it looked like. And it really disturbing images of what looks like a war zone on the border from our colleagues down in San Diego. So I would encourage folks to follow us on Facebook and do whatever you have to do. I don't know, like I'm not a pro at Facebook, but like to pin us so we come up first in your feed so that you can mm-hmm. be regularly updated to what's going on. We've got an advocacy day. The state legislative session is starting on Monday. And so we've got an immigrant advocacy day coming up on Monday, February 4th, that we would love for folks to come to the State House with us. And we don't know what to expect this year at the State House, but we certainly know that last year the passage of Senate File 41 has just ramped up the already present fear in the community.
And what was that again? Remind
Senate us. File 481 was what people typically refer to as the anti-sanctuary city bill. In my head, it's really more of a warrantless detention bill that requires local law enforcement to hold people on ICE detainers, among other things. And so super problematic, confusing, raising the level of fear. And so, like I said, so we had that pass last year. So we're already in a space where we're sort of alert to what might happen this year. But we're going to be putting forward some pro-immigrant resolutions and pieces of policy, too, that we hope will at least get talked about. And so having folks engage on that mm-hmm. is really helpful, too. And of course, calling members of Congress. I know it's sort of at this point, it feels a little pointless sometimes, especially in Ames. But if folks can be reaching out to Senators Grassley and Ernst right now and asking them to not support funding for the border wall, that would be really helpful.
All right. Well, I know we've just scratched the surface, but you've given us a lot to think about.
That was a lot.
And some good tips on how people might get involved. And we'll put a link to AFSC up on our website when we post the show. But people can find you at your website and on Facebook and stay informed that way. And then they can get legislative updates of issues that you're concerned – at AFSC is concerned about, and follow and support those.
You bet.
Sounds like a plan. Thanks very much for coming up from Des Moines, especially, and for helping us understand some of the complexities of what's happening. We've been talking with Erica Johnson from the American Friends Service Committee, a national organization, but she's with their office in Des Moines.
All things come from Mother Earth. Stars are no exception. They form secretly in the earth and then drift along just under the surface until they find the roots of the magical cottonwood tree. They enter the roots and slowly work their way up through the tree. Finally, they come to rest in the small twigs at the end of the branches. Here they wait patiently until they are needed. When the spirit of the night sky decides she needs more beautiful stars to light up the heavens, she calls upon the wind spirit to help her. The spirit of the wind sends his blustery gusts in all directions. Soon the wind shakes the magical cottonwood tree so hard that the twigs begin to break off. Then, as each of the twigs break away, the stars are released, and even more escape when the twigs break again as they hit the ground. Now new stars race up into the night sky, where each one is carefully put into a special place. When the spirit of the night sky has enough new stars, she tells the wind spirit to stop, and the wind settles down to a gentle night breeze. Of course, the spirit of the night sky wants to thank the wind spirit for his help, so she asks all the new stars to twinkle brightly for him. This way, the wind spirit can see where all the new stars he helped escape have been placed. So if you want to add a new star to the night sky, gather some cottonwood star twigs and snap a few to make sure you have the good ones. Then wait for a clear night. When your special night comes, find a spot where you can see lots of stars. Hold your twig up toward the night sky and snap it. After you snap, check the ends of your twig to see if you have a star pattern showing. If you do, then you have put a new star into the sky. The star pattern is the shadow that the new star leaves behind. Look up at the night sky again, and if you look very carefully in the same direction that you released your new star, you will see it twinkling brightly. This is your thank you from the spirit of the night sky for adding a beautiful new star to her heavenly kingdom. So how to find your stars? The stars are found by snapping the small dry twigs, which have fallen from a cottonwood tree. Look for the growth wrinkles in the bark. There will often be several on one twig. The wrinkles look a little like the wrinkles in a Flex soda straw. Hold the twig close to the growth wrinkles and snap it. Some twigs may be too green or too rotten, but many will produce a 5-point secret star. With a little practice, you will know which twigs have the stars hiding inside. You can see the star best if you shade it from the sun and look straight in at the broken end. You can also enhance some stars by rubbing them on fine sandpaper. A sanded star will usually show up better if you moisten it. Cottonwood stars in the heavenly night skies.
This environmental update is sponsored by the Outdoor Alliance of Story County, Story County's Conservation's Friends Group, working to enhance outdoor recreation, education, and conservation. Information can be found at www.oasco.org.
This is Local Talk on KHOI. Thanks for tuning in. We've been joined in the studio by Mary Rankin and several guests that she brought along, Justin Moore and Susan Jasper. Thanks to all of you for being here.
And good morning.
I'm going to let Mary introduce her guests more officially and lead us in this conversation.
I am Very happy to do that. It's such a gorgeous morning, and I'm so excited to be here once again talking about sustainability in our beautiful community of Ames. I have with me, as you mentioned, Justin Moore. Justin's a city planner for the city of Ames, and Susan Jasper is a community engagement specialist, and she is in a unique role. We share this sisterhood in that she has a shared position both with the city of Ames and also Iowa State University. And I invited both of these folks with me today because we have some really very exciting sustainability events coming up in January. And as I think about sustainability and our goal and our work toward a sustainable future, I definitely think that engagement and awareness building is an important part of that. And so Susan and Justin both are connected with really interesting, unique events, but having complementary connections to sustainability. And then I also am going to talk about a little event that we have that I want to invite folks to at the end of our time together. But first of all, let's talk about these two community events that we have going on. And Justin, let's start off with you. So you're a planner with the City of Ames. Can you just mention a little bit more about what that exactly entails?
Right. So I'm a planner with the City of Ames, of course, Department of Planning and Housing.
Yes.
Is where we're located. And what we do is we oversee, particularly in our department, the issuance of zoning permits, site plans, creation of subdivisions. Basically, we administer the land use plan for the City of Ames, and so as well as the zoning ordinance.
Okay.
And one of those aspects of that is we also have a floodplain ordinance that we oversee as well.
Fabulous. So definitely part of that planning for a sustainable future.
Yes,
most definitely. And so you have an event coming up actually this coming week.
Correct.
Just talk a little bit more about that. And that's specifically related to the last thing you mentioned, floodplain planning.
Yes. So coming up on Wednesday this next week at the Ames Water Plant on East 13th Street, there's going to be an open house for the general public to come through from 5:30 to 7:30 to speak with FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Agency, the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. There'll also be some local officials there as well, some City of Ames officials. We're going to be, I guess, kind of unveiling, in a sense, the proposed new flood insurance maps, which establish the floodplain for the City of Ames. FEMA is completing or proposing now new maps for Story County, and that includes Ames.
Mm-hmm.
So what this does is this will, in some cases, redefine where the boundaries of the floodplain are, which in some instances won't change. But in some areas, it could include new properties now that were not included before.
Sure.
And then there are some areas from our preliminary review where it looks like the properties that are currently in the floodplain may not be in the floodplain anymore. So it's definitely an important process that we're going to be going through, where this is the start of about a 2-year process.
Wow.
Ahead of, at the end of the 2 years, the adoption of the new floodplain map.
Right. So this is a fabulous time for folks to be able to learn more about what is being proposed, how it impacts them, and to give feedback as well. Because as you mentioned, this is a 2-year process, right? So community feedback is very important.
Yep, exactly. And this is, like I say, kind of the start of the process. What we're going to be doing here in the coming weeks and months, we're going to be also sending notice or reaching out individually to make property owners aware of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Those that already have land in the floodplain and those that will are proposed to come into the floodplain. So, you know, that they're individually aware of that there's something happening, and
mm-hmm.
Point them to the appropriate resources.
Definitely. And these are updating existing maps. When was the last time we had these maps considered?
Yeah. It has been right about 10 years.
Okay.
The current maps were established in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a small study that was done in 2014 for the Whirly Creek area.
Sure, right.
But that was very focused.
Mm-hmm.
This will update, though, virtually the entire city. And it's using updated data that FEMA uses, rainfall, LIDAR data, that sort of thing to give a more accurate representation of where the floodplain is at.
Right.
Do floodplains actually change physically? Or, I mean, is that why the update is needed? Or is there just more information? You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
Does the way where water flows mm-hmm. actually change over time?
Yeah. So I think really what it is more up-to-date, accurate uh-huh. information. By and large, the rivers, the streams, they don't change themselves all that much. We kind of have two areas within the floodplain that are looked at separately, but they're all included in the floodplain. One of them is the floodway, which there's virtually no development of any sort mm-hmm, allowed mm-hmm. in the floodway. That's the area just adjacent to the stream or the stream itself. And then there's the floodway fringe, which is an area where development can occur, but it's regulated. So there are certain specific things a developer must do to the
sure.
land and ways that they must develop if they want to do anything. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's but that's all what we call the floodplain. And generally it's staying the same, but as I said, there's a few areas where it's growing based on new data, and then a few maybe where it's retracting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, our rivers and streams are pretty much where they were last time.
Right. Well, and you mentioned the technological components that have come into play since mm-hmm. we last looked at this.
Correct.
And also, I would imagine, as development has occurred, that can impact sort of how the floodplain itself might be impacted, correct? So there's a little mm-hmm. bit of updates there to
sure.
say, well, 10 years ago, this hadn't happened, and this wasn't sure. here, and this mm-hmm. wasn't here. And so now we see these different impacts.
Because that influences where yeah. the water flows.
Right,
yeah.
right, right.
And one thing that it's important for people to realize, too, is the floodplain affects your flood insurance. So
Most definitely. If
people own property, particularly structures that are in the floodplain, the updates like this will, they can find out if anything's changing with their flood insurance rates
right.
or their flood insurance. If they're coming into the floodplain for the first time, that'll definitely have an impact if they don't have flood insurance already.
Yes.
So it's certainly important stuff to be aware of.
Right. Being proactive as we look toward the future. That's
yep.
great.
Yep.
So remind us of the details of the event.
Yep. So the event is at it's the new Ames Water Plant, which is at 1800 East 13th Street. And the open house where it's going to be is on Wednesday, January 16th, this coming Wednesday. And that's going to be from 5:30 to 7:30 in the main conference room there. The open house is obviously open to the Ames residents. It's also it's being held actually for countywide purposes.
Right.
So since
right.
this is all part of an update for Story County, as far as information, as far as updates and information that can be gotten, people can go to cityofames.org/floodmap.
Great.
Yep, and that will take them to our flood page. There's a little more information there and some links that they can click on that have the new flood maps uploaded.
Excellent. So. And this is a drop-in event, so it's
yep.
not as though
yep.
people have to come for 2 hours
exactly.
to have their questions answered. They can drop in, talk to folks, pick up some information,
right.
make note of the website,
mm-hmm.
and be on their way.
Right. There's no formal presentation.
Okay.
So there will be representatives from FEMA and the Iowa DNR present there, as well as probably some other local officials. People are welcome to ask questions, and hopefully we'll have answers for them. If not, we can certainly get it for them.
Get contact
yep.
information to them and get
yep.
information later.
Yes.
That's great. Thank you very much, Justin.
You bet.
And so, Susan, then I mentioned that this was a drop-in event that's happening at the water plant because you're part of a really exciting series that's happening related to informing folks about sustainability, particularly climate change.
Indeed. And our event is not really drop-in. So
that's right.
It's a series that developed after we at the Ames Public Library held some environmental-themed films last year, mm-hmm. and attendance was kind of a little low. A small group of really passionate people
right.
came regularly, and there's just a sense of urgency with the climate situation. And so, as I worked with Irv Kloss, who is a retired Iowa State University professor.
Former council member as well.
Oh, yes,
he's been
yes.
very involved in our community.
I have to say he's very inspiring. And so as we talked about ways to increase the attendance, I realized that my role working at both the Iowa State and the Ames Public Libraries was an opportunity to invite different organizations to be partners and to increase that attendance
right.
and to make this more than just come and watch a film, feel sad at the end, and then go home with and not know what to do about the information you just saw. And Irv was really committed to making sure that we're keeping these films or TED Talks or whatever the media is going to be to spark the conversation, to really keep them science-based and really current, because there's a lot of information on the internet that might be out of date. And
absolutely. Being able to have those facts to
right.
really be cognizant of, absolutely.
So as he and I talked about different topics, and I partnered with the Green Umbrella Student Org at Iowa State and talked with other community groups like Wheatsfield Co-op about the different topics that were of interest to them, we ended up deciding to have three events in the series. The first one, Irv is actually going to be speaking, and that's this Wednesday, January 16th. And the title is Learn the Science Behind Climate Change and Why You Should Care.
Mm-hmm.
And Irv is going to show two TED Talks and then address those. And then a community group, the Ames Climate Action Team, is going to have some kind of action at the end of the event where people can sign a petition or get together and maybe write a postcard. I'm not actually facilitating
right. or
that.
Or just even having some dialogue
right.
on what you have seen, as you mentioned. You're not just leaving after that. You're
right.
being able to discuss it and say, where do we want to go from here?
Right.
right? Mm-hmm.
And then because we invited Iowa State students and we want to get them to come all the way to downtown Ames, we've decided to add a light meal before the film.
If you feed them, they will come.
Yes, yes. They made that very clear. And so we also thought that's an opportunity for some community building
Definitely.
Between the different demographics. The Ames High Cause environmental group will be attending as well. So we're going to have high schoolers, college students, retired people, university townies. And so I'm really anticipating some good conversation and energy developing here.
Sounds like a great diversity of representation in the community. And as you mentioned, this is such a relevant and timely topic. We've seen international reports, national reports. Certainly, we have lived with events around us as community members and as, you know, members of the world and, you know, the world around us. So this is happening. It's around us, and it's something for us all to be engaged in. How can we be a part of being proactive as we face the future? So
right.
this is very timely. And it's, as you mentioned, there are three events. It's not just in January. We have one on February 25th and also one on March 27th.
Yes.
And where can folks find more information?
The Ames Public Library has a new webpage that just went live this week. So if you visit that site under events, you will find these. And also, there's a lot of Facebook presence. So if anyone has questions, that's a good forum to bounce back and forth. We're really excited that we have the university student energy promoting it.
We have
with
so
us.
Much energy. So
yes.
it's great. Yes. That is fantastic, Susan. Thank you so much. And so as we mentioned, folks can check out the floodplain drop-in session and then go over to the library and take part in the first of the series on climate crisis.
So I just wanted to point out that the light meal is going to be at 6:30 and then the presentation starts at 7.
Okay.
So people don't have to come for the meal, but definitely for the presentation. So,
and do people excellent. Have to register in advance?
No,
okay.
no.
We're excited about hosting that.
Open invitations yes. for everything. That's great. Thank you so much for
bring this to our attention, and we'll put links to both these events on our website when we post the show later today.
That's fabulous. And one more event I would mention that I sent you information about also, that if you would post information, that would be great. The Smart Business Challenge. We have started an annual recognition and information event, and this year's event will be January 24th at Ryman Gardens. It's a luncheon event. We would ask that you could, if you want, would register, that would be fabulous. You can actually contact me at 515-294-5052 to register. There is a light meal. We start at 11:30 with some information from different organizations in the community to assist in sustainability building for businesses. And then we will have a recognition program. We're recognizing Morning Bell, Mary Greeley, and Wild Water Car Wash as being platinum members this year. And then we'll have a panel discussion on what businesses can do to really assist in ensuring a sustainable future for our community. And so we are excited to encourage folks, even if you're not involved in the challenge, to come and learn more about it.
Lots going on. So people shouldn't be sitting home bemoaning the cold.
That's
get
right.
out there and do these things. Thank you. We've been talking with Mary Rankin, who's with the Office of Sustainability at the City of Ames and ISU, along with Justin Moore and Susan Jasper. And this is KHOI Community Radio, and you've been listening to Local Talk. I'm your host, Gail Seiler. Local Talk is broadcast at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. on Monday and Wednesday, and 5 p.m. on Friday. You can also listen to today's Local Talk show and all of our past shows at our website, khoifm.org. Local Talk was engineered by Aladdin Alkathiri. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Thanks to the other voices we heard on today's show, Dennis Hart with the news and Erica Johnson from the American Friends Service Committee. And most of all, remember, your participation as audience and supporter is what makes KHOI possible and meaningful. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio.